So now we're going to go from trains to cars to planes. Private jet to the poorhouse? Is that what they'll also say if the auto industry bailout fails? Yesterday, the big three automakers came from Detroit to Washington to make their case to Congress that they absolutely needed a federal bailout. But instead of taking a commercial flight or carpooling, they decided to board their luxury private jets. House members called them out on what Washington Post reporter Dana Milbank called their stone-cold deafness. Members of Congress are warming up to the idea of walking away from a $25 billion budget bailout of the auto industry. To discuss the status of the industry bailout is Keith Naughton, Newsweek Midwest bureau chief based in Detroit. Keith, welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for having me.
So what were these guys thinking, right?
Well, they didn't seem to understand the need to appeal to the heart as well as the head in their approach to Washington. The corporate jets weren't probably a good idea, and they didn't seem well prepared to offer to take pay cuts themselves, or to take the old Lee Iacocca pledge to work for a dollar.
Right.
Yeah, only Nardelli from Chrysler did that, and not Wagner from GM or Mullally from Ford.
Well, at least they could, they could have come and asked for raises as well, so it wasn't that bad.
Well, the thing is those things are just symbolic. Of course, yeah. Iacocca ended up making millions from the stock options he got instead of the salary, but still, it's important when you're preaching poor mouth to show a little, that you're taking some steps yourself.
And Lee Iacocca was the former CEO of Chrysler.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the bailout looks like it's not going to happen, right? If they have any chance, Congress would have to vote on it today if it had any chance.
They would. They're getting out of town today, and
yeah.
And it looks kind of bleak. The notion of getting $25 billion, which is what Detroit wants, from that $700 billion that Hank Paulson has at Treasury, that seems to be dead. The only possibility seems if they can rejigger these loans that they'd set up for the automakers to retool their factories to make green cars. There's $25 billion there. The White House and the Republicans would like to loosen the strings on that money so that it's not quite so green car oriented, and then that could provide Detroit with the kind of life-saving loans they need
Democrats,
to get through.
The Democrats aren't
they are
likely to vote for that, right?
They are not keen on that at all. They obviously are very interested in green cars. So that's the debate. Can they come up with some compromise today to make that money work?
And, what's the chance of something like that happening today?
Right now, it seems slim. They're running out of time. You have all the members who want to hop their own flights, presumably not on private jets, and get out of town. It just doesn't look like there'll be much. And if that's what comes to pass, GM and Chrysler have said they don't have enough cash to make it through the end of the year, or more importantly, to January 20th when Barack Obama would be sworn in, and seems more likely to give them help.
David Cruz in for Brian Lehrer on WNYC and WNYC.org. We're talking with Keith Naughton. He's the Newsweek Midwest bureau chief based in Detroit. So despite all kinds of smart people arguing on their behalf, including President-elect Obama, the big three executives didn't really represent their circumstances that well. Do you think their out-of-touch behavior has any real effects on what Congress decides to do ultimately?
I don't know. These sorts of hearings are always sort of kabuki theater, and there was plenty of that, style over substance. But
yeah. But
what they didn't seem to come with, again, I go back to the Iacocca pattern that worked so well all those years ago, is you have to come with a clear and understandable plan. Iacocca, in that case, said, hey, we've got these fuel-efficient K cars coming that will save us. Here's our plan. Everybody took a haircut, whether it was Iacocca himself or the union or the lenders or the suppliers. They all shared in the pain. And they got the money, and it worked, and the cars did turn them around.
How did they screw it up? Is it that they don't have an alternative, or they were unable to effectively articulate an alternative?
Well, the argument they seem to make is simply that, hey, we're running out of cash. We need cash. We're burning it so fast. We need cash, and it's not our fault because it's the credit market freezing up and gas prices skyrocketing. People weren't buying that argument, and it didn't offer a lot of forward spin. And they needed, they needed their K car argument, and they didn't have it.
We can also open up the phones to some of our listeners. Let's hear what you think. The number here is 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. David Cruz in for Brian Lehr on WNYC. Keith Naughton is with us. He's the Newsweek Midwest Bureau Chief based in Detroit. So, Keith, these guys are making millions of dollars. The head of GM made $15 million. The Chrysler guy says he's going to take a symbolic dollar a year, but the guy from Ford, Alan Mulally, makes $21 million a year. I mean, most people looking at that find it hard to draw up much sympathy for them, huh?
Right. That's why I come back to they needed to do the dollar a year pledge that only Nardelli did, and they need to have been prepared for that coming in. I'm surprised that they were blindsided by that. I think Wagner said, I've already committed to not taking bonuses and 50% cut in pay, and that's all great, but you can't just, sort of recycle what you've already done. You need to come up with a new offer to share the pain, and they really seem blindsided by that notion.
What have the unions proposed to do to take their share of this haircut?
Well, and there's the problem, too. I mean, Detroit has been going through this kind of, wrenching overhaul for several years, and last year the Big Three and the UAW negotiated this new contract that does, in fact, they had a lot of concessions in it. For example, new workers work at half the pay of existing workers. So the UAW's notion is that they've given their pint of blood. It's just like Rick Wagner saying, I've already, cut my pay in half. You got to come with something new. You can't say, I've already given my concessions and I'm not given any more, and expect Congress to fork over the money. I just don't think it works that way.
Mitt Romney was the latest to speak out in favor of letting the car companies go into Chapter 11. He wrote an op-ed piece, I think it was in the Times yesterday. What about talk about that?
Yeah, Rick Wagner, the GM CEO, says any talk of bankruptcy working for them is pure fantasy, in his words, I believe, because people won't buy cars from a bankrupt company.
Is that true, you think?
Well, I think there is a point to that. I think it's buying cars from a bankrupt company is different than buying a ticket on a bankrupt airline that just needs to get you from point A to point B. A car is something that you want to drive around in for several years, and if you don't think the company behind it's going to be around for all those years, you might not buy that car. But there are other and actually Mitt Romney suggested this in his op-ed piece. There are other ways to create some security that the car buying public might believe in, and that is if it was a prepackaged bankruptcy backed by the government, with the government backing the loans they would need to get through the bankruptcy. That might give some confidence that the company wouldn't just ultimately go away.
All right, let me take a call here. Harry from Queens is on the line. Harry, welcome to the program.
Good morning. I teach business at a college in New Jersey, and I think this is just another example of Congress trying to get the little guy to beat up the big guy, and in the long run, we're going to take it at the bottom end.
What do you mean by that exactly, Harry?
Well,
bottom end part, but the little guy beating up the big guy.
Well, let's take General Motors and beat up a big corporation and punish them, and it looks great on paper, but the bottom line is if we don't support the auto industry, the little guy at the bottom is going to suffer with the ramifications in the economy, the trickle-down effect of all these businesses taking a hit.
But you're cool with these guys who are running these companies making multiple millions of dollars? You don't think that people
absolutely,
are not justified?
Absolutely not. I think that we can put certain restrictions on these people. I think that if we do give them the money, it has to have a lot of strings attached to it. But I don't think that by putting General Motors out of business, we're doing this economy any good.
All right, Harry, thanks for your call. Keith, nobody's really talking about putting these companies out of business, are they?
Well, these companies are saying they could go out of business if they don't get these loans. I think Harry makes a good point. You know, we can all experience a lot of good schadenfreude by saying these CEOs are overpaid or that they mismanaged the company. That, you know, all may be true, but the fact of the matter is there are 3 million jobs on the line if these companies go under. And in an economy like we have right now, that could really send us spiraling downward. And we have to consider that as we take so much pleasure in kicking these guys around.
Aaron in Jersey City. Aaron, welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. A couple points. The first thing is only one of the CEOs in this case really bears any responsibility, and that's Wagoner of GM. He's been around for a long time. The other two guys are brand new. Mm-hmm. They've come in basically in the last couple of year and a half or something. Mm-hmm. So it's really unfair to lay this at Nardelli and Mullally's doorstep. The other thing, though, is that Washington bears so much responsibility for this. I mean, the fact is that these companies do great in Europe and in China, where the price of gas is at a world price. GM does wonderfully in China. They're doing badly in the U.S. because our price of gas is too low, and they end up building cars that get terrible mileage, and then the price of gas goes up, and they get slammed. And this happened in the 70s before. This is really a Washington policy issue, and they bear a great deal of responsibility for this. That is not to say that Detroit hasn't made tremendous mistakes, but I do think only one of the CEOs here bears responsibility for this.
All right, Aaron, thanks for your call. Keith, don't some of the overseas branches of these companies have lesser union worker costs as well?
The UAW only exists in the United States. Ford and GM also have unions, strong unions over in Europe. But yeah, when you go elsewhere, places like China, where the economy is government controlled, there are not strong unions, right? And GM is doing well in China. In fact, GM now sells more cars outside the United States than it does inside the United States. But the thing is that while certain government policies probably didn't help the big three, they also got drunk on SUVs.
And they also had substantial subsidies for SUVs as well, didn't they?
Well, the SUVs didn't have to meet the same kind of fuel economy regulations that regular passenger cars did. But
wasn't there
Detroit
a tax break, though, for if you had an SUV, you got a tax break?
There was.
If you could make it look like that was a work car, I guess.
Yes, some of the very largest ones. But what I'm talking about is that if they had continued to nurture just their regular passenger car business, regular cars, like Toyota and Honda did throughout the low gas price era of the 90s and the SUV era, they would find themselves today with a hedge against these high gas prices. But instead, those models didn't get much better, didn't get much attention, didn't get much money out of Detroit, and Detroit put all its money into making big, fancy SUVs.
David Cruz in for Brian Lehrer on WNYC and WNYC.org. Keith Naughton is the Newsweek Midwest Bureau Chief. He's based out of Detroit. He's with us, and we're talking about the big three auto companies. And I thought I had Alex on the line. Maybe not. All right. You know, also, Keith, there's this talk of some kind of a hybrid Chapter 11. Have you heard about that?
Well, this might be the prepackaged Chapter 11 that people are talking about.
Explain what that is a little bit.
Well, this would be, again, as in Mitt Romney's proposal, would be government-backed. You know, you need financing to get through Chapter 11, debtor-in-possession financing, it's called. Getting any kind of loan these days, just, go to your car dealership and try and get a car loan, is hard.
Yeah.
So the only way that GM or Chrysler could probably get such loans is if the government backed them. And then the government could also back the exit financing they would need to come out of Chapter 11. This is, it's called prepackaged because there's a plan for going in, reorganizing your debts, you know, tearing up your union contracts and other things, lowering your cost structure, and then emerging as a smaller, more efficient company. You need financing to get you through that whole thing, and right now GM contends it can't get that financing. It would just have to liquidate. If the government backed the financing, though, that would be the solution, some people believe.
All right. Let me get one more call in here. George is on the Upper West Side. George, welcome to WNYC.
Good morning. It's even more complicated than what's been said. If GM were to close down its entire U.S. operations today, it would be an immensely profitable multinational. I must say, in that sense, I salute the current management. They've been working very hard to fix the errors of 25 and 30 years. What we saw in Congress and what we see among the general population is remembering the arrogant GM of the way it had been and the rest, and that it remains a problem. There no doubt is a cultural problem remaining to this day between union workers and the rest, but the problem is even deeper. Not only do they have this enormous nut in terms of tremendous amount of plant in place and heavy labor costs and pension costs and hospitalization costs, which is causing them to have a much higher cost per vehicle than their competitors, but they also had suppliers that were unionized, which they spun off, and most of which went into bankruptcy, and now the major manufacturers, the OEMs as they're known, had to go back and put money back into that, which means that they're still back in on the same thing. So the bankruptcies were it to happen, which I think frankly should happen, and the restructuring that's necessary will be very painful, particularly for workers, particularly for pensioners, and particularly for suppliers. On the other hand, you have the government saying, under FTC rules, they can't easily close down franchised operators in different states because the power of the dealers is such that state laws apply to a lot of that. So it causes tremendous problems at both ends of it, and they are truly getting it in the neck right now. But were they to be able to find a way to restructure and probably having some form of government guarantee in the sense of warranties, possibly in this debtor-in-possession financing for certain portions of it, might be the only route that's going to follow. But irrespective of that, you're going to see a smaller domestic U.S. manufacturing industry for automobiles of U.S. companies. Also, I think Chrysler's in a completely different category, frankly. And if there's one that has to go, it's the one that should at this stage. There are what they call marks, brand names. Say the Cadillac CTS is an example, or certain Pontiacs, or certain Chevrolets, which have not only done very well, they have already gained public acceptance. So even if the company were to go into liquidation, there are names that would be bought and could continue to be used, would have warranties, would have service, and all the rest. So a complete liquidation is just not going to happen in the sense that one thinks of it going out of business.
All right, George, let me leave it there. So any quick comment on that, Keith? I mean, can these companies go bankrupt without the apocalypse happening?
Well, that's a point of debate, but it does seem like if you can package it in some way, there would be something redeemable, and there certainly are valuable. That's the great myth that came out of these hearings, is that Detroit is worthless, a dinosaur, I think as Senator Shelby called it. There are many valuable assets at these companies that, packaged in the right way, could be pretty formidable.
All right. Keith Naughton is Newsweek Midwest Bureau Chief based in Detroit. Keith, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up, we'll have a little primer on consumer confidence. Stay tuned.